previously on Schooled.
I tell myself every morning, Savannah, your life is gonna be different. You're gonna have a good life.
It was always a matter of supporting her, keeping her grounded, and making her realize, like, yeah, you're pregnant. It's gonna be a struggle, but, you know, you can do it.
I couldn't even take care of my kids. I was on Section 8, and I didn't want to bring her into it like that because the cycle was continuing again. She had a baby by basically a drug dealer just the same way I did.
And I just told them, I stay at home, take care of my daughter, and I do school online. But my grandma was like, I don't want you depressed, man. I want you to go to school. I want you to socialize with kids. I want you to be active. I want you to be a kid.
The odds say Savannah Zayas won't graduate high school. They say that a teen mom living in poverty isn't likely to make it through college. And they say that Savannah's daughter, Layla, is doomed to show up to kindergarten lagging behind her classmates. Savannah came to North Philadelphia's Edison High School in 2013, defiantly saying otherwise.
I know if I surround myself with positivity and just keep looking forward and not tell myself I can't do it, I'm going to be able to do it.
The odds are the odds for a reason. They're often right. They were about Savannah's mother, Neverlyn. She attended Edison, the very same high school, in the late 1990s, but dropped out just before she had Savannah at age 16.
And that's something that I always told her. Don't drop out of school, you got to finish it. Because if you drop out, you're going to be sitting home just like me on a welfare check, and it's not fun.
So when Savannah walked into Edison as a freshman, this was the burden on her back. A burden made significantly heavier by the physical and sexual abuse she endured in the hands of her father as a young child. To succeed, she hoped to find a community that would lift her up and challenge her academically, a school system ready and able to serve children who've known immense trauma. And in some classrooms, she found that, with teachers always willing to go above and beyond. But often, the school itself became just another burden to bear, a reflection of the chaotic world outside.
High school down here is a struggle. You have to, like, force yourself to do things. You have to, like, come on, let's go to class. Come on, let's not get caught in other people's situations, such as fighting that happened to me today. There was a big fight in the hallway, and I had to, excuse me, I have to go to class. That's a struggle not every day, but often that's a struggle.
This was the conversation Savannah and I had the first time we met, late in her junior year. The year was particularly tumultuous. There was a high number of staff vacancies that went unfilled. Teachers were often absent, and for much of the year, substitutes showed up an embarrassingly low percent of the time. This meant many academic hours were wasted, and students were often free to wander the halls and cause mayhem.
That fight went on for 3 minutes, and no adults was around. And it was two boys, and I don't know what they were fighting about, but
just fists and
like
hitting and
pounding in the face at each other, blood, like, bad. That gets me frustrated, because it just makes me feel like, why do I need to try so hard when I feel like everything else is, like, falling apart?
This is Schooled, a new limited-run podcast that gives you the insider story on public schools and the lives that hang in the balance. I'm your host, Kevin McCrory, and for our first 3 episodes, based on more than a year of interviews, Savannah will be our guide. This is part 2. In the modern era of public schools, urban neighborhood high schools like Edison face the greatest challenges. Implicitly, that's actually the very design of the system. First, subtract every family that opts for a private school or moving out of the city for a suburban school district. Then minus all the kids who stay in the city but are accepted into selective magnet and specialty public high schools. And then take away all the kids accepted by lottery-based charter schools. And what do you have left? Schools left to serve a student body so concentrated with need, it's almost hard to fathom.
This is the hardest job. I tell my husband it's like working in an emergency room, because you're constantly triaging children who are behind, who've been hurt, who are emotionally unwell, who are physically unwell.
Marie Woodward taught Savannah during her sophomore and junior year at Edison.
And the goal is to get them educated and to prepare them for either work or college or both. And sometimes that seems like a really impossible job.
The problems at Edison are complex, and the results are distressing. Scores on state tests are dismal, and about half of the students who start there don't graduate within 4 years. The role of public policy in shaping what happens inside, though, can't be ignored. Pennsylvania has a highly inequitable system for funding schools, almost entirely devoid of any attempt to match dollars with student need. The state considers Philadelphia one of its most burdened districts, but less money is ultimately spent on Philly kids compared to most of the other kids in the state. And so at Edison, this means the baseline is always out of whack. Really deep student need is met with a bare-bones staff and overburdened counselors and administrators.
Sometimes the problems of the community are overwhelming and a small group of teachers. That's a really big school with a very, very small staff. And it's hard to combat all of the problems of the world with just a handful of people.
If you look at the money that actually gets spent at Edison, it works out to about $7,400 per student. To put that in perspective, the state is currently spending more than five times that on each of the inmates in its prisons. There's a lot to consider there, and it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But that's $7,400 a year for Savannah and $41,000 per year for her father, a convicted child rapist. The school district plays its part as well. Over the years, it prioritized creating more specialty public and charter high schools, which in many cases have been very positive for some families. But there's a yin to the yang. This has also served to jam-pack neighborhood high schools like Edison, mostly full of kids with staggering difficulties. Take this in concert with the resource deficiencies, and what does it all add up to? Often low morale among staff, and then chronic teacher and principal turnover, all of which means a lack of dependability and continuity for the kids who need it most. Sydney Coffin teaches English at Edison.
It just becomes really difficult for the kids more than anybody. I mean, teachers get stressed, yeah, definitely. But the kids get stressed too because they don't know who they can rely on.
Savannah's life at home during her first few years of high school was as trying as ever. Her mom married a man who was locked up in a state prison, and she was then arrested for attempting to smuggle drugs inside, a felony offense.
It was intent to deliver and intent to distribute into a state prison.
So for parts of Savannah's freshman and sophomore year, her mom was in jail on the other side of the state. Savannah's brother and sister moved in with her at her grandparents' place, and she had little choice but to shoulder the added responsibility.
Even though I was like, 16? I was 16. My daughter probably was like 1, 2. So I had my daughter, I had my brother, and I had my sister. So it felt like all over again. I had to take care of them. But I didn't mind it. I'm like, I got this.
While her mom was in prison, Savannah entered what she says was a consensual sexual relationship with a man 21 years her age. If authorities had known, he could have been charged with corrupting a minor.
He was kind of like my main support. Like, when I didn't have anything, like if I didn't have money or I needed transportation or I wanted to go places, he's always the one that always like did for me and my daughter.
He became increasingly controlling as time went on.
It was just too much jealousy, and then I always had to be inside the house. Like, I couldn't come outside, I couldn't have friends, I couldn't have social media.
Savannah faced a paradox. The older man provided badly needed short-term support, but he was also a threat to Savannah's long-term goals, actively trying to dissuade her from planning for college or career.
And then he just didn't agree to the things that I agreed to about, like, going to college and, like, just working and the things that I wanted, and he just didn't care. He was just so egocentric.
Through all of this, Savannah's constant was her daughter, Layla.
Think about it. I'm not going to tell you yet.
Oh, now I know.
But if I was having a bad day, I would literally, like, talk to my one-year-old, like, oh, you can't believe, like, the day I had today. And, like, even though she was little, but I knew, like, she understood me. And, like, now that I've seen her grow and, like, now that if I'm having a bad day, I'll go home and, like, she'll give me a hug. Mommy, it's okay. Like, do you want to talk about it?
It was Layla who gave her strength. Layla who gave her energy, and it's Layla still who keeps her focused on visualizing a better future. And so, despite all the negativity in her life, Savannah refuses to harden. And this may be her most remarkable trait. Even after all the hurt she's endured, all the time she's been taken advantage of and let down, she remains optimistic and open. And so when she comes across people who earnestly try to help her, she soaks in their care like a sponge. And that's what happened with with Mrs. Woodward.
There wasn't a day that I did not want to go to that class. Like, every day I was hoping, like, I can't wait to go there. I can't wait to go there. I can't wait to let her know that this is a writing assignment that I have to do, that I know that she can help me finish.
In spaces where she feels safe and valued, Savannah is her best self, outgoing, compassionate, dynamic.
Classrooms don't run without students like Savannah, who take the lead and help take ownership for the whole class.
Again, Marie Woodward.
For instance, Angel would come in off track. Angel's hilarious. He's a jokester. And she would say, all right, Angel, you know, get your binder out, get your pen or pencil. Here's what we're doing. You need to get with us. And he would do it. He'd follow her lead.
The relationships that Mrs. Woodward built at Edison, not only with Savannah, but with many other students, speaks to a truth not often talked about in political conversations about public education. For many kids, the most important thing that happens in a day of school is simply being shown love.
There's so much negativity in so many schools. I think just because of the environment. And it comes into the building, and I think teachers get grumpy because they feel like they're trying to fight a battle that they can't win. Kids are grumpy because they feel the same way at home. And then when they come to school, it's not a safe haven. Maybe they don't feel like they come to school expecting, I'm going to be treated with love and dignity and respect. And that's not always what they're getting. And that they're going to be loved and cherished and held the way that they need to be. I have a student here who comes in and gives me a hug every day. He puts his head on my shoulder. He doesn't have a mom. And I think that's what's going on. He wants to feel like I'm his mom. And it's a little bit troublesome. I think the relationship that we have, it's a little bit awkward. It makes me a little bit uncomfortable, but I understand he has a really deep need because he misses his mother.
This speaks to a larger question that's been debated for decades. To what extent can schools really help the most disadvantaged kids overcome the immense hurdles that they have in their home lives? Savannah herself is somewhat of a skeptic. She looks around her neighborhood and she sees just how crippling the effects of poverty can be. She fears that no amount of school support and no amount of resources will help kids whose parents don't live up to their role.
This is the things that I don't get.
I was giving Savannah a ride home one night after an interview, and about a block from her house, we approached two very young children in the middle of the street. It was after dark, and no adults were nearby.
I see no parents. And then it's just crazy because then they get hit and end up on the news, but it's your fault because you weren't watching them.
But in many ways, Savannah herself is a testament to the immense power of schools. When she's been at her lowest, her relationships with teachers have been absolutely crucial lifelines. And if resources at Edison were anywhere near what they are in wealthier districts, Savannah's the kind of student who would jump at the opportunity to take advantage of more. If spent well, more resources at Edison could go very far, but it simplifies the issue to think that all of the school's problems would be solved by adding money. Teacher turnover, for instance, can be driven by the fact that pay is higher in wealthier districts, but there's often much more to it than that, and Mrs. Woodward's experience speaks to this.
There's a lot of red tape, and I think that a lot of people have really good hearts in the school district, but the red tape prohibits them to make the kind of decisions that they want to make.
Woodward decided to leave Edison midway through Savannah's junior year. She was frustrated with the school district's bureaucracy and the rigidity of the teachers' union. She didn't feel like she was getting the support she needed to grow as an educator, so she took a job in the next neighborhood over at Alani Charter High. It was a tough decision, but she says the move has been positive. For Savannah, though, it felt like the wind was knocked out of her.
I used to know my source of support. Her name was Miss Woodward. She motivated me to keep striving, even though the moments, this is very emotional, even though the moments sometimes got hard.
Savannah actually testified about this at a Philadelphia City Council hearing last year. She was there to talk about the problems caused by teacher vacancies at Edison. After Woodward left, the class was overseen by a revolving door of fill-ins and long-term substitutes.
I feel lost and I feel unmotivated. My grades, which have been very high, reflected that too. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Savannah. I go to school to learn. And I would, like, when she left, I just felt like I was going to school and it was just a waste of my time. Like, it was really, like, I was going to school every day frustrated. Like, And I had to, like, calm myself down because of the fact, like, I used to get angry with the substitutes, like, all the time. Like, I used to just come in, like, how are you a substitute? You come into this class and you don't even know what to teach us. I used to snap, like, all my friends. I used to tell us, like, what are we doing? Like, don't you see that we just wasting time coming to this classroom every day, not doing anything, not preparing us for SAT, not preparing us for college, we're just doing nothing.
Turnover also makes the job even harder for the educators who remain. Again, Sydney Coffin.
It was very frustrating. I took in a lot of the kids from her class, so I would have 60 kids sometimes in my room because they just didn't have a teacher. And then the teacher they got who filled in after her teacher had left was really incompetent.
Then that replacement teacher left.
There was nobody in there for them, like emotionally, even physically, for a period of time, and long enough that the kids were just wandering the halls.
All of this coincided with a particularly tough time in Savannah's personal life. In December of her junior year, she found out she was pregnant again with what would have been the older man's child. But there were severe problems, and doctors warned her that if she continued the pregnancy, the baby would likely die before term or suffer complications.
I didn't want to go through that. I didn't want to put myself through being attached with a baby that's not going to be mine anymore. And then plus, like, I didn't want to have it by that guy anymore because I knew how he really was. I knew what I pictured myself, what I was going to go through if I had that baby. And it wasn't going to, the both options were both going to be bad. So I didn't want to keep putting myself through a lot of, like, emotions, like a lot of bad, abusive emotions. Like, I just didn't want to do it.
Ending the pregnancy wasn't a decision Savannah took lightly.
I was crying for months. Like, it was so crazy. I couldn't eat. Like, it was a lot. I didn't even want to go to school because, like, no one knew.
In Savannah's house, as soon as you walk in the front door, there's a table with pictures of deceased family members. In a frame sits the picture of an ultrasound. Savannah talked about it while Layla played around her at her knees.
So that was another struggle that I, like, am processing.
No.
My mom's been telling me to go to therapy for it. But I feel like I can manage it, but sometimes I don't. It, like, hits me sometimes.
This happened in mid-January 2016, the week Savannah turned 19. Soon after, she stopped seeing the older man. Everything in Savannah's life was in a state of flux as she began her senior year at Edison. And day by day, week by week, even as Savannah nears graduation day, there's always a hurdle that threatens to trip her up. It's hard to overstate how hard it is to be both a full-time mom and a full-time student. Savannah began her senior year with an ambitious daily agenda.
You okay?
Up at 6:15, getting herself and Layla ready for the day and to school on time, without a car. At school, Savannah booked herself a tough slate of classes, including AP Chemistry, even though she already fulfilled her science requirements. After Edison, she takes the bus straight to her job,
Hello.
Working with younger kids at an
Thank
after-school
you.
Program. Then it's back home on the bus in time to help make dinner for the family while doing her homework, then helping Layla with hers, and then spending time with her in the evening before getting them both to bed. It's a whirlwind.
And it's just realizing that when she goes home, like, her day isn't over.
Mara Burnt is Savannah's boss at the after-school program, which is run by the Providence Center, a North Philly nonprofit.
To already be up against the obstacles that a school like Edison faces and, like, making your way through an entire day that has that many challenges and then continuing to sustain positivity to share with other people throughout a job and then bringing it home and being, like, a really great parent and a great single parent is... I can't even wrap my mind around me being able to do that with, like, 10 more years of life experience and way more social supports.
In a life filled with challenges, Savannah's job at Providence has been a godsend, giving her a baseline of stability. She relishes the feeling of contributing to her community, and Maura and the other adults who run Providence have become her North Stars.
This is my peace place. Every time I'm like upset, Maura's like, are you sure you want to go home? No, this is my peace place. I need this to come here. Because I know, like, if I really am stuck and I can't get, like, myself together, I know they will help me.
Since Savannah's mom came home from prison, the two have had a relationship that's teetered between mother-daughter and something more like equals running a household. Savannah thinks of herself as a second mother to her younger siblings, and her income largely goes to help pay bills, supplementing the family's welfare and food stamps.
Most of the time I have to give it all up, but sometimes I still try to take out like $10 or $20 here and there because like sometimes we might run out of toilet paper.
But the arrangement has often led to friction. Savannah's mom thinks she can be overbearing and bossy.
There's sometimes that I love her to death, and there's some days that I just can't stand her because she just does things that is not cool. Oh, you can't smoke in the house. I smoke wherever I want to. You're not going to tell me what I can and cannot do.
And Savannah sometimes thinks her mom isn't responsible enough. She was set off early in the school year when she found out that her mom hadn't been paying the gas bill for months.
And I came across the bill, and then I opened it, and I'm like, $900? What? That got me furious, like, very furious. And, like, she just didn't understand. Like, yeah, you know, you helped me pay for it, but it's in my name. So my name is on the lease. They look at it as I am Savannah's eye is not paying for that bill. Like, she just thought she could do it by herself. And, like, she forgets, like, we don't have a man in the house, so it's mother and daughter that have to do this. And I told her, like, I'm an adult, you're an adult, and we need to talk. Like, you know, this is our household. Like, these are our kids. Like, we need to do this together. We can't do this. You do your thing and I do my thing. It's not going to work like that.
The tension between them is rooted in something much deeper than smoking or paying bills on time. And it gets at the very core of just how difficult it can be to break the cycle of poverty. Savannah's family struggles so much on a week-to-week basis that it's hard for her mom to understand when Savannah makes larger prospects a priority. So when Savannah decides to take a minimum wage job at a nonprofit instead of earning more money somewhere else, there's tension. When Savannah talks about going away to college instead of being around to help with the younger siblings, there's tension. And when Savannah expects her mom to take on more responsibilities with Layla so she can focus on school and work, there's tension. And it's all compounded by the fact that her mom is physically unwell, with recurring kidney issues and hernia, and also unable to find work due to her felony convictions.
Because I'm just frustrated because I can't work and do stuff the way I used to do for them. Now I just have to be home and taking, how you say, painkillers every day, just so I don't have to feel pain. I just want to go back to when I'll get work and take care of my kids and not depend on nobody else. Because I hate to ask for help.
And she's prone to bouts of depression, still dealing with decisions she made 20 years ago.
I just regret giving them the father that I did and the life that I chose. Because I would have finished school, I would have had a nice job, we would have been in a nice place. Not living in the ghetto and depending on public assistance. That was never my choice. One thing was to finish school and go to hair school and be able to be somebody. I know in hair school you're not going to be nobody, but that's what I wanted to do. As soon as that man crossed me, everything went down.
All of this snowballs into issues in Savannah's life. At Edison, for instance, she's been plagued this year by latenesses and absences that stem from prioritizing Layla, getting her to school on time, taking her to doctor's appointments, etc. Things she wishes she could count on her mom to do.
When I wake up in the morning, it's very hard for me to get up because I get the sharp pains. And then she used to be like, oh, mom, can you take the baby? There were times that I would take her. There were times that I didn't feel like taking her.
Savannah expects her teachers to understand all this and be flexible with her. Some are, some aren't. Ironically enough, it's her childhood development class that's given her the hardest time this year.
She knows, and she tells me, oh, well, you need to find a way to get somebody to come 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning to take my daughter to school. And I told her, I'm like, miss, I don't have a way. I don't have help. You don't understand. I'm independent. Like, I know you know what independent means. Like, you keep forgetting, like, I'm not only a student. I'm an employee and I'm a mother. Like, I don't just go home after school and just do nothing, just sit on my butt and do nothing.
The list of stressors in Savannah's life goes on. In October, Layla's father was sentenced to 5 years in prison after being charged with a laundry list of offenses, from aggravated assault to statutory rape. He already had little contact with Layla, but this cemented further the idea that Savannah is on her own as a parent.
All I want you is to be there for my daughter. When my daughter says she wants to see daddy, she wants to spend time with daddy, she wants to go places with daddy, that is done. And now look, you can't do any of those things because you want to be chasing little girls.
Taking a step back and looking at Savannah's situation, it's easy to see why most people in her shoes end up collapsing under the weight of the pressure. And even someone like Savannah, with drive and resilience to escape, can reach a breaking point.
Because it stresses you out and it makes you want to give up. Because it really does stress me out.
Savannah seemed on the verge of one in February, when she found out she got an F on her report card in her childhood development class, largely based on her attendance.
It just made me feel like I was really low, like, and I was trying, and I still am trying, but, and then knowing that I'm so close, and I feel like I'm running down a hallway, and I'm never going to reach the door, like, that's kind of how I feel.
It was less about the grade itself, and more about what it represented. For someone who takes school as seriously as she does, who truly believes education will be her salvation, the F felt like all her efforts against the odds have been for naught, that if people can't see how hard she's fighting, that maybe she should stop.
I feel like I've been trying so hard. And then I feel like there's just like people that just like want to see me fall.
In the next episode of Schooled, we conclude our story on Savannah, whose mounting absences threatened to keep her from graduating.
So it was like overwhelming and like upsetting because the day is coming and it's just like, I'm not going to be able to be there.
Schooled is produced at WHYY in Philadelphia for Keystone Crossroads, a collaborative of Pennsylvania public media stations. The episode was written and reported by me, Kevin McCrory. Naomi Starobin was the editor. Charlie Kyer did the sound mixing. Emily Gann provided organizational support. This podcast was made possible through a grant from the William Penn Foundation. For more on Savannah's story, including great photos by Jessica Korkunis, visit keystonecrossroads.org/schooled.